face it, we're the new generation.
But as time passed, a new generation of heroes emerged.
I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it.
First third generation WWF superstar ever.
Listen, Jerry. Banya's voice is the voice of a new generation. My generation.
And welcome to what for us, although not you, is the return of Wrestling with a Generation Gap, a podcast taking a look at wrestling all throughout the years, well, as far back as there's video, there's no Abe Lincoln matches were got scheduled, and analyzing what we like and what we don't like. I say for you because we actually have not recorded in about 4 months, but I just posted the last episode before that, which covered This Tuesday in Texas and Jay Lethal versus Flip Gordon. So for those of you that are actually watching us on YouTube or listening via iTunes, you're going to be getting this in a couple of weeks, and it'll be like the second episode. But it actually is the first. This is a new sleeker, leaner, meaner WWAG. By that, I don't necessarily mean we're going to be mean. What I mean by sleeker and leaner is we're going to attempt to have a shorter time limit. This episode, for instance, will run 60 minutes. No more, hopefully no less. And the idea being something you can get done in a much shorter go. In that interest, and because for us it has been 4 months, I will not ask my co-hosts or myself whether what we have watched in the world of professional wrestling since. But I will just briefly ask, quickly, as far as you guys go, Dave and Nick first, how's everybody doing? You're excited to be here for what we're doing today?
Good.
I'm amazed you are, sure. Given what it is. I'll ask each of you. Nick, I think I'm going to go with you first, and I'm pretty sure the answer is no. Have you watched anything old school lately that's really interested you?
No.
All right, Dave? How many times have you watched the Eddie Kreutzmann promo?
I haven't gotten to it. Can't find it. I know, it's the best thing ever.
Greatest thing ever.
Greatest.
That made me do it wrong.
Oh.
That's, yep, you gotta, yep. I think I have it saved somewhere. It should be in the episode.
No, I don't think I've watched anything old recently.
I have watched some stuff.
Oh, except for the stuff in my room, but.
Oh, that's fair. I've watched some stuff, but I won't get. What we're going to watch today, ladies and gentlemen, is available on the WWE Network, and we're going to just jump right in and get to it. It is the AWA Team Challenge Series. So begin right now along with us. This is found in Hidden Gems, 1989. And there is, of course, it is the American Wrestling Association. So there's the
AWA.
Flag. And, all right, I'm just going to start right off with yay for the AWA. Not these random... Okay, that referee shaking his head was kind of funny. Thoughts on these women, gentlemen?
America, girls, rock music, Foxy Boxing.
Yep.
None of this has anything to do with wrestling.
Everything that was popular at the time in one video.
Yeah. I have a lot to say about the Foxy Boxing.
Thank God one of us does. Nick and I fast-forwarded through it, both of us.
It was terrible.
Yeah, we refused to watch. That's why I fast-forwarded it. And here we come to Vern Gagne. I'm assuming on his beachfront property in Minnesota with his dog and a nice-looking sweater.
About to do some fishing.
Looks like it, yeah. He's got a tackle.
His dog looks stoned.
How do you tell if a dog looks stoned?
Look at it. He's just like...
Yeah, well, I'm sure his dog, if he knew today, or the dog's most likely dead, that he were involved in this would be kind of shocked.
I would continually watch this AWA.
If this show had more than one episode?
Yes.
Which it doesn't. Here we have Greg Gagne on the right and Ralph Strangis, the world's dumbest Saved by the Bell extra. I don't know that for a fact. He just looks like one. Who apparently, basically, this was the guy Bischoff replaced.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So when things went south of the border with Ralph Strangis, and they're talking about all their wonderful new technology, like the ability to get close to the ring and to have slow-mo and how exciting it is. And what's the catchphrase? Do you guys remember the catchphrase Ralph says when he wants Greg? Is it like, over to you, Greg, or something?
Punch the button, Greg.
Punch the button, Greg. That's
Punch
right.
The button.
I don't know if Greg Gagne looks stoned, Dave, or just dead inside.
Dead inside. Definitely.
So this
dead.
Only ran one episode?
This ran technically no episodes. So this was an unbroadcast pilot Okay, I'm just going to let you guys go from here. What did you think of this?
Tommy Jammer?
No, this way of getting guys to do entrances.
So 80s.
Someone discovered a green screen and thought it'd be a great idea.
Why are the fans giant size, though?
Who the hell?
Why are those the two clips that we see of fans all night long?
So this, Dave, was a pilot for a new show. Vern wanted to bring the AWA back. He sent this to networks and to syndicated stations that this would be the pilot. His thought process was, Nick was mentioning it, everything that was popular in the 80s, American Gladiators was apparently an influence on this. Mm. And every person who looked at this said, are you out of your fucking minds? You think we're going to broadcast this anywhere? And so this just languished in the vaults. I mean, I didn't even know this existed until it was put on the network a few months ago. Because who knew they saved it?
What a weird idea, like cutting to the random people at a bar just cheering something on.
Yeah, they say it's a sports bar. I'm convinced it was a wedding, but I'll let it go.
It looked like a sports bar to me.
Here we have Tommy Jammer versus Tom Burton. I do have some very brief notes. This won't take long. Tommy Jammer was trained by Eddie Sharkey, worked in the AWA from February of 89 till the end of 90, then in the Indies through 1994. Once wrestled Tully Blanchard, and I know he had 25 matches. That's that.
Wow.
Tom Burton worked in Memphis in 86 and 87, once took on Tracy Smothers, and was a WWF jobber as well as an AWA jobber from 88 to 91. His last match was against Jim Duggan in February of 91.
Oh.
And he had 31 matches.
Go Tom Burton.
There's your bios, gentlemen, and that's more information than has ever been spoken about by those two in years. Any thoughts on this match, Dave?
Well, in my notes, I mostly talk about how much I like the production.
Okay, what did you like about
the... I like the... Like, for the 80s, this is much different than what I usually see. Mm. You know, like, the slow-mo replay. Awesome. Punch the button.
Yep. No, it is different. You know, and I was saying, I think this is multiple takes.
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Because neither one of these guys had more than probably 15 matches under their belt at this point.
I also picked what should have been Tommy Jammer's entrance song, but you guys don't know the song, all so right. It's kind of useless.
What is some of our listeners may.
Whammer Jammer by the Jay Giles Band.
Okay, I've heard of the Jay Giles Band.
Yeah, so have I.
All right, well, I guess that's...
I've never heard of Whammer. Yeah, maybe you're
Frank
right.
Frank Tarkington.
Yeah, maybe it's a sports bar. And now we have Sergeant Slaughter hanging out with a Nazi.
What?
Baron Von Raschke. That was his gimmick. He was a Nazi sympathizer.
Oh, wow. That's a darker character.
Now he's a face, but, you know, way back then, he was a Nazi sympathizer.
Sure.
And the Sarge, this is his rockin' G.I. Joe time period.
Yeah.
Where he was the spokesman of G.I. Joe. Any thoughts on this promo?
He could just wear
it. That's all the people need to know. Right? Is that his? And knowledge is half the battle.
Knowing is half.
Knowing.
Knowing is half the battle.
Knowing is half the battle.
The other half is winning.
Really?
I don't know. Made that up. Something had to be the other half.
I always thought it was knowledge. Knowing
is half the battle.
I haven't watched.
By the way, we didn't get a chance. Did you have anybody have star ratings for the first match? It was like a minute and a half.
I gave it 1 star, and I gave production 5 stars.
All right, I gave it one star as well. Any thoughts on that first match, Nick?
Two.
You're just randomly making up a number, aren't you?
It's not bad. It was fine. It was what it was.
It was a nice little squash.
Yeah.
This guy just—I mean—he is like the epitome of what people in the very late 80s, early 90s, what grown-ups thought kids thought was cool, what kids thought was annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, all right.
Yep. He's basically the bastard stepchild of Todd Pettengill. Mm. That level of... Now, this got me a little uncomfortable, because, Dave, you know New York and tourism better than I do. Isn't behind them that the World Trade Center?
Oh...
That's
shit.
Being destroyed by the destruction.
No, not the Trade Center.
Right, the Trade Center surviving. The hotel in front of it is being torn. The Curtis Hotel.
I didn't know that was New York.
I didn't notice.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the World Trade Center, which makes this even more awkward.
Yeah.
Not their fault, obviously. They didn't know this was going to happen.
Oh boy, I hadn't noticed that.
Now, I remember the Beverly Brothers. This is obviously the destruction crew, same guys. To me, I don't know if you guys think this way. These guys don't look right for this gimmick.
No.
Like, they're way too blonde. They're way too... they're way too good looking. They look more like the Beverly Brothers. They look more like preppies from... Oh, God. What were they told to do here? And what is Johnny V doing? Where are they... none of this... Now it's red. Well, who is Johnny V pointing to? What? There's so many questions.
They were given no direction.
Now I know what happened to Johnny V after WWE.
You know, I have that as a note. I thought he retired. Huh. I had no idea he actually ended up somewhere. Other than doing stand-up comedy, which apparently he was pretty good at, people have said.
Now, I've heard that one of these wrestlers went on to become Mr. JL.
Yes.
The Mask Wrestler.
No idea who that is, though.
Okay.
Still a mystery to this day. But one of them also became Jerry Lynn.
Kind of like how we... Rob, we recently found out who El Generico was.
Did we?
Who was Heath Slater.
Heath Slater.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right.
All
right.
Heath Slater was El Generico.
And his partner is Ricky Rice. Now, I do have a bio on Ricky Rice.
Here we go.
He wrestled from 1986 to 1999, starting in Canada. Then he went to the AWA in May of 87, and in what I just think is a weird match, teamed with Crippler Ray Stevens, yeah, the guy that kills the guy in the Vern movie, to take on the Nasty Boys. He faced Bad Company, guys like Tejo Khan, teamed with two guys that are well-known, Baron Von Raschke and Robert Gibson. Then for a long time, was one half of the team Top Guns, which were the babyface team of the AWA in like 89 with John Paul, not John Paul Levesque. They worked Cactus Jack. They also worked a six-person tag with Wendy Richter against Bad Company and Alundra, or Medusa, at Super Clash 3.
I'd watch that match.
Yeah.
It's not good. And then in 80, surprisingly. And then in 89, he went to Stampede, where he teamed up with Bruce Hart and Chris Benoit and the British Bulldogs. Did a few WWF jobs in 91 and 90, and then more or less retired, just had one or two occasional matches on the Minneapolis indie circuit.
Huh.
But compared to the first two guys I mentioned, that's at least a career.
Hmm. That's not nothing. That's something.
Well, he's an example, and we'll get more into this when we get into stuff I have nothing to talk about. He's an example of somebody that was affected by the death of the territories. So thoughts on this? There's a couple of little bits on this match I thought were funny. I thought this was a good meat and potatoes tag match, but I wonder if anybody had any other thoughts.
I've seen the Beverly Brothers before.
Yep.
But I never saw them this bad, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, nothing against them. I just, they don't do it for me. I think they're better as the Beverly, they're way better as the Beverly Brothers.
Yep, no, I agree.
Which is sad to say.
That's not like one of the great gimmicks in wrestling history, I agree.
Better in ring or just better as characters?
Better as characters. I mean, the ring in ring's kind of the same.
Okay.
They don't fit this look. This look needs like, I'm trying to think of an example, like a grungy, like beat up wrestler. You're a guy on a construction crew. In this case, a destruction crew.
I'd buy the one man gang more than I'd buy these guys.
Yeah. All right. The one man gang. Exactly. No, I agree. And I do like the line, "Wayne the Train is in big pain." Why he's named Wayne the Train, I have no idea.
Because it rhymes.
I knew a guy that used to look like that, actually, but with dark hair. I don't know if his name was Ralph.
That's why, Rob, if you were a wrestler, you'd be Rob the Snob.
Damn, I don't like that.
I couldn't think of anything else.
Would my finishing move be the flying corn on a cob? That's my foreign object. I whack a guy with an ear of corn and knock him out. I'm a snobby farmer.
What the fuck?
You don't see that terribly often.
What, a snobby farmer?
No, sorry, shoulder block to the turnbuckle.
Oh, well, and again, Dave is certainly right. The production, I mean, Bischoff's point in his podcast, because he did a whole podcast on the AWA, and he talks about this, is Vern was trying to make something with no money. And this is a much better job than you could expect with no money. There's a funny, hilarious bit here where Johnny V gets into an argument with the fans that aren't there.
Come on, I must have missed
that. I'll see if I can find it, but yep. And yet, now, originally, of course, who knows, no one ever saw this, but if they had on TV, because clearly what they've done is they put this haze in the lights to make you think it's just overly lit and everyone's there. Mm. But there's a couple of bits where you can clearly see the wall, but that may be because we're watching this in way better definition than it would have been broadcast in 1989 if it was ever aired, which it was not. Thank God.
Too bad. I watch this. I mean, I'd cut out the Foxy boxing.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they were going for there, but, yeah.
The wrestling and the production... The wrestling is fine. The production is great, I would say.
I do like some of the fans who are told to do stuff are, like, trying not to laugh. Like, she's clearly like, hey, that's silly.
The production is something I liked about this too. Crowd shots aside,
it's more goofy than anything else. Nice power slam from which member of the
I think that's Enos.
Mike Enos. Really, most famous for having his match on Raw, on Nitro rather, interrupted by an invading Scott Hall, which kicked off. And there we have a Doomsday device, which is finally done.
Yeah.
Who was Enos's opponent that match?
Someone really obscure. Someone more obscure than Mike Enos. And he kind of takes that bump. I mean, you guys are actual, you've worked matches. Wouldn't it hurt more to, rather than land flat, than to land on your knees? Wouldn't it hurt less to land flat, I mean?
As long as you don't land on your neck, I'm okay with landing
anyway.
It also
depends. If you're wearing knee pads, it might help.
Okay, all right.
Oh, look at that guy.
Boo!
Now this cracks me up. The audio doesn't work. Really? Why did they just re-record it?
If it was just a pilot, they were just showing an example of what it would be, it probably didn't matter.
I guess not.
They might not have never
have Johnny, do you, anybody give star ratings for that match?
1.25.
1.25?
2.5.
These are insanely high ratings. I gave it 1.75. And I gave Johnny V -3 stars because he just sucks. He's a rambling idiot who makes no sense.
I like the other Valiant Brother just because he's got the beard.
Although I'll give it an extra 0.5 star for Bischoff's hair.
Bischoff
has had every hair color known to man, just about, except really light blonde and red.
Mm.
And every hairstyle known to man.
I thought he had a dog on top of his head.
He might.
Back to this guy. And Greg, oh my god. That should be like saved as a gif. This great guy you're going.
I'll make sure that's if I can find a clip of that shot, I'm gonna put that as the video that goes over the parts, because we can't show this because this is the network.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, this is gonna be an audio only episode. Everything on this is available on the network.
We're gonna get copyright struck for this bullshit. Come on.
Well, keep in mind, it takes no effort to challenge. So, I mean, WWE wouldn't have to spend any money to challenge. I'm sure if Vince was told someone is challenging this and it's going to cost us $10,000 to challenge it, it would go off the network in 2 seconds. Just like all the Stampede stuff did with Brett. Be like, I don't care. I'm surprised this was saved, to be honest. Like, they didn't save all of their episodes of their TV show, but they saved this that never got aired. It's a pilot. Now, I love this. Sergeant Slaughter talking to Colonel DeBeers.
Rob, have you ever seen Jumanji?
Yeah. Both versions.
You saw the new one, too?
Yeah, with The Rock? Sure.
Does he not remind you of the guy? I forgot his name. The guy with the gun?
Yes. The hunter.
The hunter.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yeah. He does.
Totally.
Yes. Now, we'll have a Colonel DeBeers bio, what he actually wrestles, but just to explain this gimmick, because it's one of those things some of our listeners may not be aware of. Dave, I know you're very politically savvy and a big history guy. You will. Nick, you might not. In 1989, South Africa was basically a white racist regime. Still under apartheid. Black people couldn't own land in most places, had no legal rights whatsoever. And so the racist South African militants were a legit hated thing. Whereas now you see this and go, what the fuck is he doing? Now, why Vince brought racist South Africans back in the 90s for the Truth Commission, I have no idea. But at least in 1989, I get it. It makes some sense.
Vince is always a little late on things sometimes.
Yeah.
He is. Greg Gagne.
He literally looks like he's...
He's dead inside, Dave.
Devoid of soul. Like
He was just given the note that his dog ate himself. That's how depressed he is.
Not the same dog Vern had, right?
A different dog. That dog's fine, don't worry. That was the son.
Are we about to hit Foxy Boxing?
Yes. Yeah, we are. Yes, we are. God. Fortunately, I do have... I will let Dave have his say first, and then I will talk about something else.
I don't... What did I take for notes on Foxy
Please
Boxing?
Tell me you gave this a star rating.
No.
I did. Oh, I did. Do you want it now?
Yes.
-1 star.
-1 stars. I would give this -47 stars and shoot everyone involved with it if it were up to me. So, here's the thing. This is maybe going to get into a conversation. This sort of thing can be sexy and neat and cool and erotic, at least for my taste. I mean, I'm weird. If it's done right.
Sure. Sure.
Number one, this is my own personal thing. 80s women hair is the ugliest thing ever. 50s women hair, no problem. 60s, 70s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s.
Rob doesn't like big hair.
Nope. No, that big perm spray hair, not my thing. But this is just, I mean, I would, maybe I'm wrong. You see if you guys agree with me. This must be the main reason this never got beyond a pilot.
I could see that.
There's no freaking way that this would have been like, yeah, we're going to put this on.
Fake women boxing. I understand it's wrestling.
Right.
So, you know, the scripted part is part of it.
Correct.
But they don't even adhere to their own damn rules. And then I put in my notes, you know, they didn't adhere
what
to
what did
the...
they adhere to? I didn't watch this. All right. I refused. All right.
The wrestling... the boxing match in a wrestling capacity has happened before.
Okay, you, yep, Mark Barrow and Arn Anderson, sure.
Sure. All
right, even before that.
Yep. Piper and Mr. T. Yep.
Piper, and I said that.
Yep.
At least in T versus Piper, when Piper body slams T, the match gets called.
Correct.
The match keeps going in this.
Does it? All right. This, I'll admit, this is the first time
I've not... It doesn't even know what the hell it is.
This is the first... Now, yeah, she's near the cheap in the corner. Shots. That's a snap bear.
She took off her gloves, I guess, just to beat it, like...
Now it's a hair pull.
The ref doesn't know what's going on. We have a
that
woman...
That is the smallest rig I've ever seen, too.
That is the least amount of clothes I've ever seen on a woman allowed, I think. That's definitely crazy bikini. That was a terrible suplex.
They tried a suplex. I mean, this is new to me. Rig. I've never done this before.
I told you, it doesn't even know what it is.
And now she has to put the gloves back on after a suplex?
Yeah, we got to keep going, Rob.
Okay, all right.
This is some bullshit.
Irish whip?
She humping her neck with her knee. This is dumb for wrestling standards.
Yes, yes. Wrestling looks like a friggin' Fellini film compared to this.
Ah, a whip.
A...
Oh, my God.
What the hell?
She was tied. They weren't on the same wavelength.
Those fists are clearly just hitting the... Oh, what am I bitching about?
This whole thing is terrible.
This kicker! Like,
kicker like a dog! All
right, if you're going to be a boxing match, you're a boxing match. If you're going to be a wrestling match, you're wrestling. You can't be both this blatantly.
Oh, my God.
Goes against the fucking rules.
I so want to see Dave Meltzer be forced to do commentary for this. Dave Meltzer and Jim Ross.
Oh, we have to have... Oh, this guy. I don't know. That yeah, shot was up. Did we really need to show like five people all at once?
There's more.
All right, here we go.
There are more of these women in the audience than the... Wait, now there's another woman in who's interfering.
Yeah, that's the manager that you...
She's interfering with the worst backbreaker I've ever seen.
That's the manager that stopped boxing so she could manage the young lady.
These people are to Tori Wilson and Stacy Keibler as Tori Wilson and Stacy Keibler are to Kenny Omega and Okada.
Yeah.
In terms of ability. Yeah.
This is so bad.
Just now so I'm worse. Like... I'm sort of... I both am and...
Wow.
Just clean their clock, Rob.
What can you say? I both am and I'm not. This guy...
This guy's amused.
Well, I admit it's funny, but not in a good way. Like, seriously, how did Vern Gagne not see this and commit suicide?
She won.
How did he not just go, fuck this, I don't want to live anymore?
Thank God.
And he just said, that's unbelievable. And I said,
you are
unbelievable
not lying.
Is right, buddy. Negative one star.
I'm sticking negative 47 stars. Nick, negative 48?
I abstain.
You refuse to dignify it with a rating.
Correct.
Greg, I mean, he looks like he's trying to hypnotize people now. Doesn't he? He looks like a televangelist who's trying to convince you to join a cult.
I want more of him.
So Nick's takeaway, he wants more Greg Gagne. Well,
watch AWA, he's all over it from the mid-70s on. Now we have, this show was just a pilot, never went anywhere.
Yeah.
But the Team Challenge series, which starts here in 1089, continued for the next year, right to the end of the company. And it was finally won, I can't remember by which team, I do know who won. The final match was won by longtime jobber Jake the Milkman Milliman in a turkey on a pole battle royal.
Wow, this company does.
Don't ask. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen
it. Who were Larry's Legends?
See, this was the thing about the Team Challenge series that did make sense. At this point, the AWA was so dead. They were drawing, their biggest house this year was 1,400 people. Keep in mind, their biggest house 3 years earlier had been 23,000.
Wow.
So that's a pretty steep decline. So they were doing so bad at this, nobody stuck with the teams, Dave. In fact, I believe Roshki and Sarge were gone by the end of it.
Holy
so the leaders of the teams were gone. It was just the Raiders, the Mercs, the Jackoffs, whatever the fuck they were called. I don't care. And so membership wouldn't stay the same. So we would have to actually look it up to find a complete list of people on the team.
Wow.
And I don't care enough about it to do that, I'll be honest. This guy, though, Paul Diamond, I do have some notes on him. On the next page. His wrestling career lasted from 1985 to 2001. He was trained by the Malenkos and Chris Adams, Dean and Joe and the dad,
cool.
Boris. He started off in Georgia, then went to Texas All-Star Wrestling, which was an outlaw promotion that was feuding with WCCW and those guys. And he teamed with, for a time in 85, he was part of a tag team with Shawn Michaels called American Force. From 386, he went on to Memphis with a brief run in 1986 in Japan, where he wrestled Tenryu, Jumbo, and Tiger Mask.
Oh, no, Baba.
86, Baba was semi-part-time. And Choshu. Oh. And amongst his tag team partners on this tour in Japan were Tiger Jeet Singh and Stan Hansen.
Oh, God.
So I cannot imagine that. His AWA debut was February of 88. Now, by that time, he had already paired in Memphis and been tag champs with Pat Tanaka, who would be his longtime tag team partner. And during this entire AWA run, he was also working Memphis, because this is when Memphis, AWA, and WCCW had an informal working agreement to try to each not die. Took on teams like the Rockers and the Rock and Roll Express. His WWF debut was March of 1990, but he didn't work TVs for his first 8 months. He only worked house shows, and he did work a few televised house shows, like the MSG ones.
Okay.
He was a babyface, basically a Paul Roma-level guy.
Right.
He'd beat the jobbers, but everybody else would beat him. But then, on 11-24-1990, the night after Survivor Series, he re-debuted as Kato, the masked member of the Orient Express, because Tanaka was the other guy in the Orient Express. And him and Sato, it wasn't working, and Sato didn't want to stay in the WWF, he wanted to go back to Japan. So they switched Kato with Sato, or Sato with Kato. Kato's no more Japanese than I am.
Yeah.
He stayed as part of the Orient Express off and on, but in the gimmick of Kato, full-time through September of 1992. And then 3 days later, re-debuted in the WWF under his now third gimmick, Max Moon.
Get out! Yeah. That was him?
That was Max Moon.
Holy shit.
Yep. Then, oddly enough, 3 days after that, went back to being Kato for a two-week run.
Ugh.
Then went back to being Max Moon, who's probably his most famous matches. He loses to Shawn Michaels in Monday Night Raw's first ever title match.
Huh.
Week one of Raw, Intercontinental title, Max Moon beat him. He participated in the 93 Royal Rumble. He left in February of 93. And then worked a variety of promotions for the rest of his career. Some New Japan, some ECW. Oddly enough, he went to WCW as another different masked Japanese guy, Haito, where he took on such guys as Steve Austin and Ricky Steamboat.
Huh.
And then in 1997, the USWA and ECW reunited Bad Company. They actually were part of Raven's gang in 97 for a little bit and feuded with Tommy Dreamer. He also took on RVD once, your boy. And then proceeded to work the indies through his retirement in 2001.
Oh, hell of a career.
So Paul Diamond had a career. Colonel De Beers, his real name is Ed Wiskowski, and that is who he wrestled as for most of his career. He debuted in 1972. Dave, you're going to laugh at his trainers, because they do have one thing in common. I thought about it. They were both at WrestleMania 3. He was trained by Harley Race.
Yeah.
And Lord Littlebrook.
That's awesome.
You know, the fat, bald...
Oh, I know. I know.
That's on Bundy's team at WrestleMania 3. Him and Harley Race trained this guy.
What a weird duo.
Yes, that's gotta be... I don't get it. His opening match was... His first ever match was a victory over Tony Garea. He worked 6 months in Florida and took on guys like Dick Slater, Paul Jones, Kevin Sullivan, mostly as a babyface jobber to the stars. Then did a year in Mid-Atlantic, again in low undercards, where he faced Johnny Valentine. But he did get a pinfall victory over Flair in Flair's first month in the territory in May of 74 in Charlotte.
Damn.
Which I thought was interesting. In 75, he goes to St. Louis and Central States, and now he gets a push. He's Missouri state champ. He's pushed in those territories. He even gets in 1977 two out of three falls NWA title match with Marley Race, his old trainer. And he also, one of his regular opponents in this Central States run, was a wrestler by the name of Robert Slaughter, who would, of course, go on to become Sergeant Slaughter. So Slaughter's reference to "we've had many wars in the past" is actually quite accurate. It's referring to 12 years ago. In July of 77, he made his first tour of Japan, fought Tenryu, Baba, and Jumbo.
Of course.
And his partner for that, most of that run, was either Dick Murdoch or Don Morocco. Talk about two different guys to team up with. One's the a KKK member, and Don Morocco is way too laid back to be racist. You have to put it in an effort to being racist.
The most racist Morocco ever got was Fuji-chan.
Fuji-chan, yep. In August of 77, when he comes back to the U.S., he works Portland as a main event guy. In fact, he was a multi-time tag champ with our boy Buddy Rose.
Huh.
And then he was also part of the connection when Portland was also San Francisco in 79 and 80. So he was working all that area a lot. After that, he went back for a few months to St. Louis and Central States. In 81, he goes back to Mid-South and takes on guys like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Jam Garvin, Jake Roberts. Oddly enough, he then has about a five-month run in Florida as Derek Draper, a heel who takes on Barry Windham, Dusty Rhodes, and other guys. I don't have any results for him at all on any wrestling website from August of 82 to April of 84. So I'm guessing... Yep.
He took 2 years off.
I'm guessing he must have gotten really injured. The only thing I could... So if anyone knows what happened to Ed Wiskowski in that time period, let me know. Then he goes back to Portland. One of my favorite things is one point he teams up with, I can't remember who his partner was, but he fights Andre and Buddy Rose. And then in February of 86, debuts in the AWA as Colonel DeBeers, a gimmick he will finish up his career with in early 92. Although he does have one reunion match in 2005, where it's him, Snuka, and Piper versus Bob Orton, Buddy Rose, and Bob Orton, versus Jimmy Valiant, Jimmy Snuka, and Roddy Piper.
He had a pretty varied career.
A very varied career, long career. Thoughts on this match, since it's now over?
It was okay.
I gave it a star rating.
You gave it a star?
I gave it 1.5 for the surprise.
1.5. I gave it 1.25, so I'm the middleman on that one.
2.5.
I don't like over-the-top rope match rules,
yeah,
to be honest. Like, a singles match should just have a match.
Sure.
And that's the end of it.
But there were so many organizations that made going over the top illegal, I kind of can accept it
as a finish because it's so dangerous. You're right. Okay, I see that. Here we have now Sergeant Slaughter versus the Terminator, not Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm pretty sure, was in better shape than that at 6 months old.
Yes.
You know what I never understood, and maybe this just makes me weird?
Yep.
Why Sarge used the Cobra Clutch?
Well, he's a member of G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
And who's the archenemy of G.I. Joe?
Cobra.
So you're putting a clutch on Cobra.
Okay.
All right.
That makes sense.
Full disclosure, he used the Cobra Clutch for years before he joined G.I. Joe.
Made
that.
All right.
That's complete bullshit.
But at least you understood what I was going for.
Yes, it doesn't make sense in that context. This is a period of time in Slaughter's life, so he got the G.I. Joe deal in late 84. And if you know the story about that, Vince basically said, no, you can't do that because you'd be competing with us. Because we have our own action figure.
Oh, okay.
I don't want you working with another... Which, I mean, newsflash, kids in the 80s, as one I can say this, weren't going, man, I could either collect WWF or G.I. Joe. The WWF were these giant rubber 8-inch figures. The G.I. Joes, these little 3... Although, the G.I. Joe figures were better wrestling toys than the WWF figures because the G.I. Joe guys can move in any conceivable direction you could think of.
Mm.
There is no move those guys can't do.
But that King Kong Bundy is a weapon.
Yes. A lethal weapon. Now, Slaughter's weird because Slaughter then had an LJN figure made, mm-hmm. But because he had left the WWF, they didn't want it, so they sold it to Hasbro, who released it as a special item you could get with flag points. So you could get, like, an 8-inch rubber Sergeant Slaughter to interact with your 3 3/4-inch plastic G.I. Joes, one of which was also a 3 3/4-inch Sergeant Slaughter. So I don't know if any kids ever figured out, maybe Sergeant Slaughter builds a giant statue of himself in one episode. But at this point, Slaughter was basically only working part-time because his asking rate was something like $4,000 or $5,000 a show. Wow. Which in that time, Dave, in 1989, how many indie shows do you think made $5,000 in profit?
He was asking $4,000 to $5,000
$4,000 to $5,000 per match. He didn't want to wrestle. So he just set his rate at such a rate that it's like, oh, fine, I'll do it. Because his G.I. Joe deal apparently was worth, like, I've heard numbers of, like, close to $200,000 a year just to go around the country and promote it, which is about what he'd make as a wrestler. Yeah. And nobody's ever gotten injured telling kids they should buy G.I. Joe toys.
So why did he go back to WWF in the 90s?
The Joe deal expired.
That makes sense.
G.I. Joe basically was moving on and didn't want to use him. At the end, he was doing, he would do the intros to repeats of the old Joe cartoon on the USA Network. He would do an intro and an outro. And here, I don't know if you agree with me, Dave, he is way more out of shape than he is in his WF run. Yeah. He looks, I mean, he's got to be about 50 pounds heavier. And it's just, like, you can tell this guy works maybe 2-3 matches a year.
Yeah.
Because this match is bad and slow.
Even I, who don't necessarily like Slaughter normally to begin with, would say he's worse
here. I like Slaughter a lot, especially heel Slaughter in the, like, that tag match we saw with him and Don Kernodle against Steamboat and Youngblood.
Yeah.
I like Slaughter a lot, but yeah, this is bad stuff. Because again, he's working 2-3 matches a year.
Yeah. He's put on weight.
Who is the Terminator?
Nick and I debated this, and Nick was right and I was wrong. So mark your calendars. Nick knew more about an old school wrestler than I. He's actually the brother of Johnny Ace and Road Warrior Animal.
Really?
Yeah.
He's like the third.
And
like,
what I
want to
know is
brother.
What I want to know is, Dave, all right, let's take a look at Johnny Ace in our mind. All right, right now. Let's take a look at Animal.
Oh, wait, are we talking Johnny? I haven't really seen Johnny Ace.
He basically, imagine a taller, dumber looking Shane Douglas.
I know John Laurinaitis. I just can't think of Johnny Ace.
They were paired up as the
all right.
I say better physically, but
the skateboard idiots. I can't think of the name. Who the fuck were their parents to produce three kids that looked like that?
Yeah.
John Lauren.
Okay. Road Warrior Animal was bigger than that when he was 12.
I can see the resemblance in the head, though. The face.
Yeah, a little bit.
Not Johnny Ace at all, but...
He kind of looks like Kane Hodder.
His haircut reminds me of Shingo Takagi.
Oh, good call. Call that Rob has no idea who that is.
Rob has no idea who that is.
Okay, all right. I'm not going to argue with you because I don't know you're wrong.
Yeah.
But this to me is just such a very basic, sluggish. And I get it's 1989, but trust me when I tell you, this was not good for 1989.
So I can tell. This didn't get 2 stars from me.
He looks a lot like the Animal, but I don't see the John Laurinaitis.
Yeah.
That's a weird family.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
People power.
Manslaughter.
Yeah, this match was not very impressive. He looks tired and
he's Slaughter admits this. He says when he first started his WF run a year after this, he was horribly out of shape, and they put him against the Warrior, who, you know, the Warrior's consumed more caffeine in one day than I have in my whole life. So it's probably true. I've had like 8 cups of coffee in my whole life. So
in Camp WWE, they said it was Red Bull.
Red Bull? Did they have Red Bull in the 80s?
No.
I don't think so. I don't remember it.
But I think Red Bull was a 2000s thing.
Yeah.
Shingo too. But Shingo Takagi is an up-and-coming New Japan guy.
Okay,
you may learn him one day.
But Slaughter was a top name in the 80s. It's just at this point, you know, he was actually one of the guys that in 85, 86, the AWA really put a lot of stake in, but he just didn't want to fork full time because he was getting paid more money to just go to toy stores and...
You could describe him as semi-retired at this
point. Exactly. He's go to a toy store and telling kids G.I. Joe's awesome. That's a hell of a lot easier than doing this.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. This doesn't seem that hard.
It's still harder than talking.
Sure. Terminator is feeding him everything.
He
Slaughter
is,
has to stand there.
He does do a drop kick, and he does do a cross body. I mean, he does try, But yeah, and it's not, and again, to me, I get more frustrated with an out of shape good worker turning terrible than I do with just a bad worker. Because he is definitely, his WWF run where he's teaming up with Saddam Hussein, which is what convinced me wrestling was fake, was, well, as an 11-year-old, I'm just like, this makes no goddamn sense. This guy is literally teaming up with a guy America's at war with, and we're just letting him in the country. And then, what made no sense is G.I. Joe would still have him introing the shows in the morning. You're like, wait a minute! Something's not on the up and up here.
11-year-old Rob's going, wait a minute!
G.I. Joe would not allow a known traitor to promote the show in their cartoon. I'm not buying this. And the dream was dead. There's a picture somewhere of Slaughter putting that Cobra Clutch on Will Kennedy.
Should we just cut to a replay in the middle of the finish?
Yeah! What
the fuck were they thinking? Don't hit the button!
He said hit the button! You don't have a choice! Oh, if we could meet Greg Gotti, I'm so going to... Greg, hit the button! Just to see what he does. Probably punch me in the face. It'd be worth it. And Slaughter wins with the Cobra Clutch to the surprise of roughly no one. I gave this 3/4 of a star.
I'd say 1.
So for me, the match of the night was the tag.
Yeah.
It was nothing actively inoffensive.
I'd say other than this match, nothing was actively inoffensive.
But point taken, if the best thing you can say about a pilot that's supposed to get people at watch excited to see a show is it didn't contain anything actively offensive.
I guess not.
It's like, that's not exactly... There wasn't anything in this that made me want to sue you for making me watch it.
Well, the Fox and Broccoli.
Okay, yeah. But as Vince McMahon Sr. used to say, there's a dial on every TV.
Yep.
Change the damn channel.
I guess my match of the night was De Beers versus Paul Diamond.
Paul Diamond? All right. Yeah, I could see that.
All right, who's your wrestler or person? And...
I gave it to Jerry Lynn based on other stuff.
Right. How about you, Nick?
I didn't know we could do that, so I'm going Lynn as well.
All right, I'm going Vern's dog.
Vern's dog? I accept that. Worst worker of the night for me, whoever thought up the idea of Foxy boxing to show.
Again, we can do that?
We can for this episode.
I guess that's my
pick. This episode
too.
Has whatever rules we can pick up. All right,
and I'm picking the guy that invented Foxy boxing.
All right, fair enough. Yokozuna back when he was Kokita Maxima. Huh. When he was really Samoan, before he became a Japanese Samoan. Poor Bird! I know Vince insisted that stay in his rib. When we come back, we're going to be watching something better than this. That's not saying very much, but what we're watching will be from next. It'll be Adam Cole taking on Ricochet. Okay, if you are along with us, this is NXT Brooklyn Takeover, August 18th at the... Does that say 42 minutes? I can't really...
That it's at the hour and 2:09 mark.
Okay, all right. And oddly enough, you guys will laugh at this. I could not read for the life of me because I didn't watch the entrances. Adam Cole's shirt tights. I actually thought the tights said "Eat Gay," which I was going to ask you guys, what the hell is that? But how did that get on the air? But now I see it's Bay Bay. So,
yeah.
Oops.
Yeah, it's not "Eat."
My apologies to Adam Cole. I will never make you sign something that says "Eat Gay." First question, North American title, number 2 belt in NXT? The Intercontinental?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, that was what I wanted to know.
There's only 4 belts, so...
Women, tag,
main,
heavyweight, and this one. Okay.
Yes.
Now, you guys have told me there really wasn't much of a story leading up to this, but the commentators talk a little bit about, sort of, that this was early on in Ricochet's run.
It would have been, right?
And he was kind of viewed as a joke by Adam Cole. Like, you're not really a wrestler, you're just a flippity-doo.
That sounds right to me.
And so I'm going to prove it by beating the crap out of you? Is that basically what the story was?
I think so. They probably had a video package we could have watched. But...
I didn't see one.
Okay, then we are good.
I didn't look for one.
I remember there was one, but I don't remember there being, like, a big story to this.
The only thought... Now, Dave, again, you watched this, and some of these voices... I did recognize Mauro Ranallo.
Yeah.
How many guys? And I recognize the Australian guy. We've heard him before.
British. Nigel.
British. Now, how many? Because it sounded like at times either 3 or 4 commentators.
I think it's 3, right?
3? Okay, I said 1 too many. I thought it just needed Moro and the British guy.
So the third one,
Percy Watson.
Okay, this Percy.
There's a guy named Percy Watson, and he's not the British commentator? That's the most British name I have ever heard.
mean,
and he's probably the guy offended by Adam Cole's Eat Gate gimmick.
I know who would be offended by that.
Most people, I would hope.
Yeah, I would think.
That's true.
It's what I honestly thought it said. Now, I want to talk about this match because we're going to have some debates as they lock up here. So I'll start with you, Dave, because I know you were not, like, this is the worst thing you've ever seen, but you were not hugely enamored. What about this match didn't do it for you?
Rob, I didn't get a chance to rewatch it last night.
Okay.
So.
But you watched it originally. And you yes, said it
I
was
did.
Like,
eh. I didn't, it didn't. You know, it didn't jump off at the page at me. It was, I see so many NXT matches that are good.
Good, right. And context, too, if this was 4.5 stars and there were 3 5-star matches on the card, then it is technically.
You also have to take into account that we watched both these guys in New Japan, and they were probably both better there than they are here.
Okay, all
even
right.
Even in their worst.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, obviously, a lot of Ricochet, mostly as Prince Puma and all the Lucha Underground Season 1 I watched.
Yeah.
This is my first time seeing Adam Cole, I think.
He's adequate.
That's
maybe the best I would give him, is he's adequate.
I really liked, and it's a funny thing, this match takes seeing the whole thing to get an opinion of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, kind of.
Which, I mean, you shouldn't form a star rating when you're halfway through a match anyway, I'm not saying that, but in the sense that, and we've talked about this before, and you guys have told me this is the case, much like most modern matches, this match starts low and just consistently goes up, rather than the sort of going up and down of the old school.
Mm.
Because this match essentially starts with a heel shine sequence, then Ricochet takes over and pretty much never loses control.
See, to me, this wasn't a slow increase. I think it starts low and then about halfway just suddenly spikes.
Okay. That's all right. I would give you that too. Yes. Maybe. But it never goes lower once it gets higher.
Yeah.
It just keeps getting higher. But no, I think your point's taken.
Its trajectory is ultimately up, but it stays pretty even for a while.
I like the story they're telling, which is, you know, you don't know how to wrestle, so I'm going to give you a wrestling lesson. I'm going to do headlocks, I'm going to do shoulder blocks, I'm going to do the most basic stuff to just wear you down and humiliate you. And again, you know, something I've said before, rarely in wrestling nowadays do we get less is more. Adam Cole seems like an example. Look, all that stuff that Ricochet just did, flipping out to get out of it, what does Cole do? Just puts the headlock back on. And if there's a more basic move in wrestling than the standing side headlock, I don't know it.
It's interesting. I wouldn't think you'd like Adam Cole. I would think you'd find him boring. But maybe this is just one match.
And maybe because there's somebody else who's such a contrast, it works.
Yeah.
That could be. I don't know. But no, I enjoyed this. I got what they're trying to do.
Mm.
And I got the fact that where Adam Cole gets stupid, it's very much Apollo Rocky II from Rocky II. Because Adam Cole has this one until he gets dumb and tries to play Ricochet's game. Mm. I'm going to try to outkick and out-aerial the aerial guy, and that's a really bad idea.
Mm.
That's not what happens, by the way. Rocky does not beat Apollo with a Hurricane Runner or a Moonsault in Rocky 2. But he tries, just letting you know, Nick.
It'd be amazing.
He tried it out of nowhere. Well, after what we saw today, you can mix boxing and wrestling moves.
Sure.
But, although technically, Clubber Lang does do several whips into the corner turnbuckle, so.
Doesn't Thunder Lips like pick Rocky?
But that's an actual wrestling. That's a match where wrestling moves are legal.
Was that? Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, it does a hell of a suplex, a leg drop,
so,
clothesline.
This was Ricochet's third
match
takeover, I think.
Oh,
okay. So he's been around for a while at this point.
Well, let me just make sure.
He's got lawn darted into the guardrail.
Be like 9 months, probably about.
Is he still there?
Yeah.
How about Adam Cole?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, now I see it says Bay, but look at the shorts for a minute and imagine watching them on a smaller screen than this from a distance. I thought it said like ear gay or eat gay or what is
the
it?
The color choice makes it really hard to read.
Yep.
So Ricochet's first one was at TakeOver New Orleans, where he was in the ladder match for the inaugural North American Championship.
When is TakeOver New Orleans?
That's what I was gonna ask.
October?
No, that was before WrestleMania.
So he's at this point been around for like 4 months.
About that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he came in like a little bit before and then announced himself in the match. Maybe had like 1 week, 2 week feud and then.
And the Prince Puma character has been gone for a few years, right?
Since season 2?
No, I think he might have made the season 3, didn't he?
I don't know. Can't recall.
Okay. So then after that, he was just New Japan at ROH as Ricochet? Or just New Japan?
I can't speak to ROH, but New Japan, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know how much ROH he did. And then he faced Velveteen Dream at the next TakeOver Chicago.
Assuming he won that.
Velveteen Dream, you never know with that guy. Yeah, he won that.
And again, just basic stuff here. What is he going back to? Back to the hold.
Yep.
Is there anything you guys want to know about Adam Cole?
I don't know anything about the guy, so...
I know he started in ROH is where he, like...
They have not tried to claim, by the way, he's a kayfabe Michael Cole relative, have they?
No.
Okay.
No, and he's never been to the coal mine, which is good. All right.
Start dirty, I agree.
His first was Combat Zone Wrestling.
Oh, he started in CZW?
Isn't that one of the ECW knockoffs where they kill people?
Yes. More hardcore than ECW.
Yeah.
Yeah. Started in CZW? That's weird.
He was trained at the CSW Wrestling Academy by DJ Hyde and John Dahmer.
Okay, Hyde's decent.
I didn't know Jeffrey Dahmer's brother was into wrestling.
I almost think that might be his actual gimmick. That wouldn't shock me.
That'd be terrible.
That place.
Yeah, that's definitely an offensive gimmick.
So that's where he started.
I'm telling you, I thought it said eat gay.
He did a bunch of stuff on the indie circuit. When did he start with ROH?
I'm going to guess 07.
I'm going to guess 2010, 2011.
I'm
going to
guess 2009.
Was it 2009, Dave?
Yes.
Okay.
So close.
He made his Ring of Honor debut on February 28, 2009, when he lost to John Kerman in a dark match at the Ring of Honor taping.
And here, what a beautiful flying flippity-do by Ricochet. Lands on his feet. Doesn't really seem to hit him that much. That's one of the only objections I have to this style, is a lot of times the strikes don't feel like they're doing anything. But he hits some pretty stiff kicks on the forearms.
Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole end up becoming a team.
And they're the Undisputed, right? Or part of it.
Yes.
Yes.
That's Eric Young's group.
No. Eric Young's group is...
Sanity.
Insanity. I almost called it Insanity.
But they're heels, Undisputed Era. I mean, he's clearly a heel.
Undisputed Era is a heel. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Are they still essentially doing the same thing now? I mean, it's not been that long, last August, but is Ricochet, are they still sort of upper mid-card NXT guys?
It's the impression I've always got.
Undisputed Era, yeah.
What about Ricochet?
Still have...
Do you think he'll get a main roster
push? I don't know.
Yeah, at some point, yeah, of course.
There were jokes on the internet that they were planning on making Kenny Omega Skylar Breeze.
Heavy Machinery is getting a main roster run, Davey. Ricochet sure is
shit. Isn't that a common razor?
No, Heavy Machinery are just too fat. Like,
oh, Howe and Ransom? Or
no,
Rowan Hansen.
Rowan Hansen? Yeah, they're my tag champs on Raw.
No, that's
I have them feuding
that's
with...
That's the War Raiders.
Oh, okay. No, I currently have the War Raiders feuding with a common razor on Raw.
I didn't realize just how many fat, out-of-shape tag teams there were, but...
Sorry, I don't know them all.
There's a few, yeah.
This is like you with the fat, out-of-shape blonde guys from the 70s that all look alike. I don't know them all.
Fair.
Adam Cole was also part of the Kingdom for a little bit.
The group that Maria and her husband were in.
Yeah.
That's now completely different.
Yep.
Yeah. Well...
Because isn't Maria now like the evil trying to take over 205? I saw a bit of that, but Mike Kanellis isn't even a cruiserweight.
Who the hell knows?
Okay.
I guess, yeah, you don't watch that.
Even Dave draws the line at the D show.
I don't even watch the A and B show. I just watch pay-per-views.
Well, this is an odd match because once Ricochet takes back... I mean, usually match structure. Face starts off working a limb or something like that. That was well nicely done.
Yeah.
That was what woke me up to this. I'm like, yes, this is good. Usually the face takes over, then the heel takes over for a long extended segment, makes a fuck up, the face takes over, makes a big comeback, and that leads to the finish. This match is... Heel dominates the first half, face dominates the second half, and wins.
Yeah.
Which I like, because, again, I'm old school, but I like breaking the format sometimes. Because like, the hot tag. Mm. There should, in my opinion, be tag matches where the hot tag fails, and the heels just win.
Because
if it works every single time, then why are the heels even trying? Mm. Just wait until the hot tag comes. The match isn't going to end before that anyway.
True. The second half of this match isn't entirely Ricochet, too. Adam Cole gets a few good moves.
He does, yes. Yeah. Yes, it is.
That's one of the things I kind of liked. Like, he counters some Ricochet-ass Ricochet shit.
Yes. Now he's taking him seriously, but in a way it's too late. Because now he's given his opponent a fighting chance. Of course, now we're going to get a little strong style spot, I think. Or some breathing. Strong style breathing.
Strong style breathing.
Dave, just for all our listeners, what has happened recently with New Japan Wrestling or happened on one card that has you quite possibly contemplating, from what I understand, enlisting in the Foreign Legion? You're so depressed about it.
What?
Something happened in New Japan?
Something didn't happen in New Japan.
Oh, the Rumble. Yeah, fuck yeah.
I don't
care that it's over.
Now, had they always announced them, but this one they didn't?
They do, usually.
Okay, so you sort of were just thinking it was a mistake and they forgot to announce it, or they just, you know, they didn't need to? Has anyone... Oh!
Once they announced the gauntlet, I was like, okay, we're
Has done. Anyone speculated on why there was no Rumble?
They'd rather have the gauntlet.
Okay.
Which their was...
Little... Now, is that Adam Cole's finisher, that sort of suplex into a... whatever the fuck you'd call that?
Oh, like release suplex thing he did?
Yep.
No.
What is his finisher, baby?
I don't remember.
Yeah, you just name it. I couldn't tell it. No, I really liked this. I mean, this to me, like, and you watch the replay, boom, and he gets him in the upper chest, lower throat, rather than hit him in the face. But that did not look easy to do and not legit. I've never seen it before. Again, I don't watch as much of this stuff as you guys do.
And it didn't necessarily feel choreographed. Like, it was off just enough to look.
That's really a good point. Yeah. That's one of the reasons I really like Goldberg matches, is because they look a little raw.
Yeah, right.
And I kind of like that.
I guess just because he was bad, but yeah.
I don't think it's because he was bad, I think it's because he was new. He was put in a new position way before he should have, most guys would be.
He wasn't crisp.
Yes, but I don't need everybody. If everyone's too crisp, it's Cirque du Soleil wrestling to me.
It's true.
Oh.
That doesn't mean we need to have everyone work Lana style.
That was a strong style.
Now, yes, this is definitely a strong style spot, sequence.
I don't think we're going to be getting a New Japan Rumble just going back to that next year either. It doesn't look like it.
Yeah, once the tradition dies, that tends to happen.
I don't know, Nick.
This is what I love. They start just kicking the shit out of each other.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
But the 2 days is so that everyone else gets a real match.
Take a knee to the face, motherfucker. Oh, yeah, take a boot. Oh, I'm not done. Oh, you got one more. I got one more. What I think of that. I said in my notes, greatest kick exchange in wrestling history that I've ever seen.
I can't believe I'm the one who's like, they're no selling big things though.
we've warped each other.
I'm
gonna be wanting to watch ROH marathons and you're gonna be bitching about how nobody works the leg anymore.
You know, the one thing I will say about that sequence though is they both get so exhausted at the end and pass out on each other. I like that portion of it. But they did just no sell a bunch of big kicks. This might be one of the better Adam Cole matches I've seen. Maybe.
So he's not well regarded then.
No, he's fine. He's just not spectacular.
So when I announced I wanted to watch this match, you guys were probably just like, huh?
Kind of. That was kind of my reaction. I'm like, all right.
I honestly picked it because I'm trying to keep things to an hour.
Cool. Yeah.
And so there'll be some times where we'll do a half hour, 15, 20 minutes of old school, so we could do a longer match. But I was like, I need something at 15 minutes. I want to do NXT because I want to be able to watch it now on the network.
Cole's fairly...
Oh! Good.
That was great.
That looks painful. I know guys do that now more often, but that just looks like it fucking hurts like hell.
I can see this as a smart pick, though, because you know Ricochet is talented, and Adam Cole is someone you haven't seen, so it'll let you see him as well. Yeah. Makes sense.
We watched Ricochet Ospreay.
Yep.
I think we watched... Is that the only... Yeah, that's the only Ricochet I think we've seen.
We might have watched one more, but I'm not sure.
I think we did. You're right. And then, I love this move. Because the crowd's going for it. What does Adam Cole do? What any heel does? He's a cowardly douchebag who runs away. If you're facing Adam Cole, you should be allowed to search your arsenal for "Don't be a douchebag."
I like that facial expression.
Yeah, he's like, I don't think so. I'm just not going to take it. But now he makes the mistake every heel makes.
This is a really cool spot that seems weird.
He starts. Oh, ow!
So well done.
He gets cocky and he gets his ass hurricane rotted.
Yeah. Simple, but great.
Yep. And now he's going to take it, and now he's going to get beat. He got stupid.
Yeah.
I love that. He's like, his neck is a he can't even crawl. It's like a freaking whale that's been peached.
6:30 or was it something?
Yeah, I believe this is the 6:30, which I looked up what the day was.
Yeah, okay.
I could do that. In a game.
All
right.
Star ratings on this match.
I don't feel like I can give it an accurate star rating.
All right.
3.5.
Well, I was the high man on this, but the low man on Meltzer and Scott Keith at 4 stars. I really liked this.
It's a good match.
Because I the ending I thought was really... I watched the last, 5 minutes, I started paying attention.
Maybe you guys have now broken me in to the point where I just like all this stuff now, and I'm like, 4 stars, check it out.
Honestly, I was kind of thinking about something else.
Except if we do Fandango.
I mean, you're right, though. This match is perfectly, it's good.
If we do the Fashion Files, that's not getting 4 stars.
Yeah, no.
Just to be clear. Well, that's it for us. We're going to be back next week. But pay attention to our YouTube for a special bonus feature a week after this airs. For Dave and Nick, I'm Rob at The Hub. We'll see you next time.
And let's face it, we're the new generation.
But as time passed, a new generation of heroes emerged.
I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it.
First third generation WWF superstar ever.
Listen, Jerry. Banya's voice is the voice of a new generation. My generation.